again, and welcome to Musings on Sports, where great storytelling is our passion. I'm Kelly Elvin, along with Bob Bupka. Bob, I know you share the excitement of having David Marinus, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, whose new book on Jim Thorpe is going to be a top seller, as our guest today. But Bob Bupka, the story of today and the last few days is all about the adventures of Bob Bupka. You're in a hospital bed right now. What in the world transpired?
Well, I was trying to think up what could I do exciting prior to doing an interview with a Pulitzer Prize winner in David Marinus. So I decided to break my hip.
And of course you did.
I am now coming to you live from Houston Methodist Hospital, broadcasting with all the medical people scrambling, and I mean scrambling, to get some mental help down here. They said, this guy's fine physically, but we dire need of some mental help. And that's where I am, Big Kel. And that doesn't even compare to your excitement. You got to go to Army-Navy with your son.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic with my son Ryan. We flew up on Friday. Well, let's get back here for a second. So you had a fall on Thursday, right? And
right.
Then by, what was it, Saturday?
Yeah.
You had a new hip. Is that right?
That's right.
That's
one thing they have here in Houston. And, you know, most places have, soda machines and snack machines. Well, Houston's so advanced medically. They have a hip machine available. So you just put the proper amount of money in and you get a new hip.
So you get a new hip on Saturday, and then Sunday they're telling you, you got to get up and about. You were on your feet Sunday, right?
I was on my feet Sunday.
How are you feeling now? What's the situation now? What's the prognosis? We got to get you out of that hospital bed, though, obviously, right?
Obviously.
You're going to drive people nuts there.
If they're not nuts already, they certainly will be. And I am so saddened by what happened with the University of Texas basketball coach. I have a lot of great friends that went to UT. And I can't believe the agony I feel for those friends, for what that coach did. He's a disgrace to coaching. And if anybody ever says the word coach in front of his name around me, they'll never do it again.
Yeah, this lead into to David Marinus is kind of a topsy-turvy one. You mentioned about the joy that I had with my son at the Army-Navy game. You obviously have dealt with a lot the last few days at University of Texas. Chris Beard has been suspended without pay for a domestic violence arrest. Anytime the word strangulation is in a report, that's a very bad thing. And his days as the Texas basketball coach clearly are going to be numbered. This is a guy who took Texas Tech to the national championship game just a few years ago and was a coach on the rise. But no more. And I understand your feelings very much towards anyone who would do the things that he's accused of. We also have, unbelievably sad news in the passing of Mike Leach at the age of 61, the Mississippi State football coach. Coach Leach was unique. And I was listening earlier today to Paul Feinbaum on ESPN, who referred to Leach as the smartest coach I've ever been around. And Feinbaum's been in SEC territory for a long time. Leach did not play college football. He was an attorney, of all things. He went from being an attorney playing rugby in college, and he decided to become a coach, instituted this high-powered air raid offense at Texas Tech, where Cliff Kingsbury, who is the coach of the Arizona Cardinals, was his first quarterback. And it was all about moving the ball up and down the field really fast and generating excitement, which is exactly what he did, and winning a lot of games at Texas Tech. Then he took that out to Pullman, Washington, as the head coach at Washington State. Very successful there. got tapped on the shoulder to take the job at Mississippi State, and they just beat Mississippi in a very dramatic win in the Egg Bowl. And they were about to play, or they were scheduled to play in a January 2nd bowl game in Tampa against Illinois. But just incredibly sad. Coach had apparently had gone to a holiday gathering on Saturday night, Sunday morning, suffered a massive heart attack. And today, Tuesday, the 13th of December, he passed away. He passed away actually last night. Just incredibly sad with the passing of Mike Leach.
It's so depressing. I mean, so depressing. He was a upbeat guy, a very intelligent guy.
Yeah, very.
And an excellent coach. I mean, there's so much bizarre stuff going on with coaches right now. It takes my breath away, and it more so than getting a hip replaced. Now, if anybody ever thought they could ever say that, they probably were crazy.
Well, you know, I want to offer a couple of thoughts, and we're going to talk about the situation with the former Navy coach, Ken Niumata Lolo, in just a second. But my son and I, Ryan, we flew up to Philadelphia on Friday, took in the whole experience of the Army-Navy game on Saturday. And it is just that, Bob. It's unlike any football game. You have the march-ins for both sides, from the Naval Academy and from the cadets. And then you have the really cool fly-ins where the guys, the Rangers, are flying in out of the sky and into midfield and onto the surface of the game, onto the playing field. That is, the game itself was kind of like watching something from the 1950s. I mean, neither team really threw the ball. Navy literally didn't have any passing yards the entire game. The game became the first in overtime in the history of the Army-Navy game. Army ended up winning it, and the Navy coach, Coach Ken, who is the all-time winningest coach, he won 109 games in his 15 seasons at the Naval Academy. And I said he won that because he was, I don't know how else to say this, he was unceremoniously fired by the athletic director, Chet Gladchuk, in the locker room after the game. Bob, this is a very upstanding coach who gets his guys to graduate, who represented the United States Naval Academy in the highest way possible. And I would like to think, Bob, that after 15 seasons, that it could have been done in a classier way than the way Coach Ken basically was dumped as the longtime coach at Navy.
Let me put it another way, Kelly. It could not have been done in a less classier way.
Right.
A less classier way.
I will add this, if you have the Army-Navy game on your bucket list, do it, okay? Next year, it had been in Philadelphia for a number of years consecutively. Next year, it's going to Foxborough, Massachusetts, or Foxborough, Mass., where the Patriots play. So I think they're gonna kind of route it around for a few years from Boston to D.C. to Baltimore to New York. But if you can go early, experience the tailgates, experience the pomp and circumstance, the pageantry. It's truly unlike anything I had ever experienced. So very cool for me, like you were talking about last week, Bob. You know, you and I have done a lot of neat things in our professional career, but to be able to personally take my son and sit next to him and have him watch the Army-Navy game, see some history with it going to overtime, and the stadium, Lincoln Financial Field, was packed. I mean, the place, and nobody left. And when they sing the two anthems of the academies afterward, I mean, boy, if you don't get a little emotional from all of that, I'm not sure you're necessarily a red, white, and blue American. Hey, one other thing, Tiger Woods and Charlie this weekend at the father-son. And you've been kind of laid up there for a while, Bob. Tiger actually admitted that Charlie's hitting the ball off the tee farther than him. So this should be really fascinating to see Charlie Woods out driving his dad.
Well, I'd be extremely nervous if I was Tiger with the way things are going with coaches and this and that. It would not surprise me that as Tiger shows up on the first tee, Charlie says, "Pops, I'm not going to need you this week."
Yeah, I'm done with you, right?
I'm done.
Well, it should be a lot of fun. The ratings will be really good for that event, for the PNC father-son, because of those two. I mean, you have a lot of other notable tour players, but people are going to watch because of Tiger Woods and Charlie. And, you know, you, man, in all seriousness, could a young man have a better mentor and teacher than Charlie Woods has in Tiger in preparing him for, you know, what I would imagine is, you know, he has every reason to believe he'll have a very successful, amateur career in college, wherever he goes, and then professional career. Doesn't get any better than having Tiger as a teacher, does it?
I can't imagine it being any better. I know Tiger won 15 majors.
Yeah.
He would trade all 15 majors if Charlie gets to play in just one.
Well, I get the feeling Charlie's going to play in a bunch. And, you know, but before we hear from our friends at Titleist, I want to mention David Marinus, who's our guest. David Marinus is, in my opinion, one of the great, not just sports writers, he's one of the great writers in our country. He's written 12 books. And this, the new book that he has out on Jim Thorpe, who was, I don't think there's any debate, he was the greatest athlete in the history of the United States. It completes for David Marinus what he calls his trilogy. He wrote a book on Coach Lombardi. He then wrote a book on Roberto Clemente, calling him baseball's last hero. And this book on Jim Thorpe is going to be, I think, a huge seller, one that people will want to read. And just hearing from David, boy, Bob, every book he writes, he commits 3 to 4 years of his life for every book. I mean, you talk about giving to your time. Talk about making the product as good as it can be, right?
That is absolutely incredible. Dedication to making a piece of literary work fabulous. David deserves all the credit in the world. It's just mind-boggling. And, you know, to carry this theme, I know I've alluded to the fact that I am in the hospital, and we haven't even mentioned that we got a great interview as a guest next week, one of the all-time great sports writers for Sports Illustrated, none other than the one and only Rick Riley.
Yeah, and you know, for about a decade, when Rick wrote his column, The Life of Riley, on the back page of Sports Illustrated, that was the first page that many, and myself included, that's what we read first. I mean, he's a gifted, great writer. And yeah, Rick's going to be with us next week, so that's going to be a lot of fun. However, before we hear from Rick Riley next week, you're going to hear momentarily from David Marinus, Pulitzer Prize-winning author. Jim Thorpe is the new biography that he's written. And you'll hear from David right after this from our friends at Titleist.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Bob, what a thrill it is to be joined by one of the greatest writers our country has ever produced. He is the recipient of a 1993 Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting and was part of a team that won another Pulitzer in 2007 for coverage of the Virginia Tech shooting. Among the subjects of the 13 books he has authored are Coach Vince Lombardi, Roberto Clemente, and the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. His new book is Path Lit by Lightning, The Life of Jim Thorpe. We are delighted to welcome David Marinus to Musings on Sports. David, how are you?
I'm pretty good and happy to be with you guys.
Well, if you think you're happy, David, I'm making somewhat of podcast history here. I fell and broke my hip, or had my hip replaced yesterday, and I'm trying to do this podcast today. So please bear with me. I'm a little dumbed up more than usual.
You know, a lot of people have said things about Bob Bupka throughout his life, but nothing can compare to the things that are going to be said now, the heroic things that will be said now about you, Mr. Bupka.
That's right. Even on whatever pain medicines you're on, you're pretty lucid.
I might be better. Who knows?
Exactly.
Anyway, the Virginia Tech thing hits home because my brother's daughter went to Virginia Tech, so it holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah, that was one of many tragedies, but a horrible one.
For sure. Well, you sure have written about great people. I would hate to be put on a quiz and say, please tell us some people that are greater than the ones that David wrote on. I'd say, I'll pass. He's got all the great ones.
Hey, David, I have to ask you, you know, in a lot of ways, Jim Thorpe has been almost a mythical figure for people down through the years. Yet as you write in the new biography, he dealt with some very real challenges as he became America's greatest all-around athlete. Wondering what inspired you, first of all, to want to write about Thorpe? What was it?
You know, I would say that it's the third in a trilogy of sports books that about characters who I think transcend sports, Lombardi, Clemente, and Thorpe. And in each case, what I'm looking for, Kelly, is both the drama of a great story in sports and a way to use that dramatic action to illuminate American sociology and history. So for Thorpe, it was a chance to write about the Native American experience through his incredible life. And that's what drew me to it. Just as with Lombardi, it was a way not just to write about a fabulous football coach, but also about leadership and the mythology of competition and success in American life, what it takes and what it costs. For Clemente, it was not just a beautiful ball player, but a chance to write about someone who truly lived and died a heroic life. You know, so many athletes are called heroes, but very few really are. Clemente died trying to deliver humanitarian aid to Nicaragua after an earthquake. So that's what draws me to these stories. I have to be obsessed to write, to devote 3 or 4 years of my life to anyone. And for Thorpe, it was that chance to write about that great athlete and also about the Native American experience.
Is that how long you devoted your life to this one book?
That's about my average, 3 to 4 years for each of my books, yes. I started this one in 2018 and came out in 2022.
Now that is dedication.
And to give that much of my life to anything, I have to really care about the subject and to live with it every day. And so that's why I'm pretty careful about how I choose my subjects.
What drew you to Jim Thorpe, and I hope I'm not mixing this up in any way, as I indicated, I am on some pain medication, but you have to take pain medication if you got a hip replaced. So if that question is not appropriate, don't answer it. If it is appropriate, what is your answer?
You know, it's really difficult to compare athletes from different generations. It's almost fruitless because of differences in diet and training and coaching. Everything is different. But Jim Thorpe did things that no athlete has done before or since. That trifecta of being an All-American football player, the first great professional football player, a decathlete and pentathlete gold medalist in the Olympics, and a Major League Baseball player. People have done two of those three things. Only Jim Thorpe has done all three.
That is absolutely incredible.
He also was a great, he was a good skater. He could play hockey, lacrosse. He was a great ballroom dancer. You know, he could literally do anything.
Man, oh man.
Yeah, to that point, David, did you in the research and before the writing, you know, so much had been written about Thorpe. Did you discover anything that perhaps you weren't aware of through the research process?
You know, I try to approach every book I do as though it's all fresh, so that everything surprises me. I don't start with any preconceptions. So in that sense, you know, everything I learned about Jim Thorpe was new to me. But, you know, I found a lot of archival materials that explored place, you know, things that I wasn't really totally familiar with. I mean, I think that his complicated relationship with Pop Warner was something that was important to the book and a surprise to me. Warner was a brilliant, innovative coach, but not a brilliant human being. And that was a disappointment to see how at the time of Jim's greatest trauma, when his gold medals were being taken away from him, Pop Warner, who was his coach at Carlisle Indian Industrial School, essentially lied about it to save his own reputation and pretended he didn't know what Thorpe had been doing playing minor league baseball, when in fact Warner knew exactly what Thorpe was doing.
Thorpe must have been a tremendously driven individual to do all the things he did on the field, but then overcome situations like that and so much of what he did as a Native American.
You know, I think he was. He had a strong will, as does almost any great athlete who overcomes things, you know, whether it's Michael Jordan or Aaron Rodgers, right? Who I'm sort of down on right now, but, you know, or Tom Brady may be a better example, drafted in the last round or the sixth round. They usually have a chip on their shoulders of some sort, and Jim Thorpe definitely had that, in part because of the way he felt he'd been mistreated as an Indian, and also partly because in school they had put him in a grade below where he thought he deserved to be, and so he basically said, "I'll show them," and he did. But you know, there's also another factor here, which is it's often the case that our society and sports writers, when they come across a great athlete who's a minority athlete, they sort of say, well, he's just naturally great at it, you know, as though they didn't have to work as hard as someone else, when in fact, most of them do and did, and Thorpe certainly did. The mythology was that he didn't have to train for his Olympic gold medals, but in fact, he trained very hard, and he also was in the vanguard of modern visualization. He could visualize what he had to do in the broad jump or high jump and then go out and do it. One of his teammates, Abel Kibiat, said, Jim Thorpe could watch someone else do something and then go out and do it better than they did.
Isn't that extremely rare power?
Yeah, I would say it is. And that's what separates the greatest from everybody else. In some way. I mean, there are certain factors that do, and that's one of them.
Man, that is absolutely amazing. If you didn't learn anything about Jim Thorpe till now, you just learned something that I'm sure 99% of the sporting world is not familiar with.
Well, and we're honored to be joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David Marinus, whose new book is a biography on the great Jim Thorpe, entitled Path Lit by Lightning, The Life of Jim Thorpe. David, 1963, Mr. Thorpe was enshrined among the first class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. You know, we always talk about, well, what would that guy have been like who played in the 20s? What would he have been like today and so forth? What kind of player do you think he would have been in today's game? And is there another NFL superstar that might compare to him? Not that he might compare to, but that might compare to him.
Well, first of all, he wouldn't have had the financial struggles that he had his whole life. He would have been a multimillionaire, right?
Yeah.
I think the most he ever got playing football was $300 a game.
Wow.
I mean, I think he could play today. First of all, he was such a brilliant all-around player. I mean, in that era, you played 60 minutes. You never came out. So,
yeah.
He was a great left halfback and a defensive backslash linebacker. You know, in college football today, the greatest defensive back is given the Jim Thorpe Award, right? So
that's right.
He was terrific at that too. And then on top of that, he was a terrific punter, routinely punting the ball 70 yards or more. So he could definitely be a punter today. And he was a place kicker. You know, that was an era when it was a straight-ahead place kick, no sure. soccer-style kicks. But he was a great drop kicker and field goal kicker. So he could do anything. I think, you know, in the modern era, because of those various skills, you might compare him to Paul Hornung, who was mm-hmm. also a kicker. I think that it is all around athletic abilities. The closest modern player would be Bo Jackson, who was both baseball and football like Thorpe, probably a little faster than Thorpe, although Thorpe was big and fast, you know, those same skills that Bo Jackson had.
How good of a baseball player was Jim Thorpe?
You know, it was not his best sport. He was good, but not great. And he played for the New York Giants under the great John McGraw. Wow. I say great John McGraw, but he mishandled Jim Thorpe. He never played him as much. And so Thorpe never got a shot. He was on the bench for the Giants for many years. Finally got a chance to play full-time in 1919 for the Boston Braves. And led the league in hitting virtually the entire year. He was up there with Ty Cobb and competing with his crosstown rival Babe Ruth for the sports section headlines. So when he got his chance, he was very good, but he didn't get a shot earlier in his life.
David, I had the opportunity to see the Broadway play Lombardi, which was inspired by your New York Times bestseller, When Pride Still Mattered, A Life of Vince Lombardi. As part of the writing of this book, you and your wife actually moved to Green Bay for a winter. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the truth. You know, in 1996, in November, I turned to my wife, Linda, and uttered the immortal loving words, "How would you like to move to Green Bay for the winter?" to which she responded, "Brr."
Yeah.
But we did, and it made a huge difference, you know, to really feel what it was like to live in that one company town where the company is the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. You know, after a week or so, Linda said, "I feel out of uniform," and she went out and bought a green and gold sweatshirt. everything there was Packers. Yeah. And also, I, you know, as much as it was hard, I wanted to endure a Green Bay winter so that I could write convincingly about the famous Ice Bowl. The winter in Green Bay is part of the Packer lore. The frozen tundra, right?
Well, and it's such a unique experience just being there, isn't it, David? The people, as you said, it's everything, right?
It is. And, you know, I would recommend to any sports fan, any lover of sports, to go to Lambeau Field once in their life. I mean, it is the shrine of pro football, and it's an incredibly fun experience.
You know, David, on a personal note, one of the few times I ever saw my dad cry was when Coach Lombardi passed away. After his one season as the head coach in Washington, he had gone to the same Catholic church where I grew up going and played golf at my dad's club. So my dad got to know him a little bit, but there was something about him, wasn't there, David? There was something about Coach Lombardi that brought out such raw emotions, whether it was from players who he drove very hard, who really worshiped him. What was it about Coach Lombardi?
He was very human. You know, you're right, those players, I mean, I interviewed almost all of the great Packer players from the glory days, and they said, well, you know, we could hate Vince Lombardi on a daily basis, but we loved him deeply.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some coaches who try to model themselves after Lombardi only get it half right. They forget the love part, how much Lombardi cared about his players, how much he put into their lives, how he helped them improve not only on the football field, but in every part of their life. So, you know, he wasn't just that hard-driving tyrant. He wasn't that at all. There was a mixture of work and play and love and work in everything that he did. And he also had great integrity.
Uh-huh.
And that, I think, just sort of radiated from him.
Yeah, I mentioned the book. You talked about the trilogy of writing of Jim Thorpe, of Coach Lombardi, and then of Roberto Clemente. I mentioned the book you wrote, Clemente, The Passion and Grace of Baseball's Last Hero. You know, unfortunately, we're coming up on 50 years. What will be 50 years since Mr. Clemente died in a plane crash? He was only 38, as you mentioned, en route to deliver aid to victims of an earthquake in Nicaragua. David, why was Roberto Clemente baseball's last hero?
Well, I think that it was because of the way he, you know, his motto in life was, if you have a chance to help others and fail to do so, you're wasting your time on this earth.
Uh-huh.
How many athletes do you hear even saying that or trying to live out that motto? He was beloved by poor people, by children, by old people. He was always looking out for people. You know, he wasn't looking out for celebrity or status. He was a person of the people, a man of the people. And that's how he lived, and that's how he died. And that's why I consider him special, and that's why baseball honors the, you know, the player who does the most for society with the Roberto Clemente Award.
Listening to David, it really strikes home, you know, not only Roberto's talent on the field, he may have been greater off the field than he was on the field.
Yeah, he had that rare combination. I mean, on the field, you know what, when I think of Clemente on the field, I think of him out in right field with that beautiful arm, you know, throwing a throw from deep right to third base or home plate. Nobody could do it like Clemente. But off the field, he was a very proud man in an era when, you know, he was a black Puerto Rican in an era where there were stereotypes about that he overcame. But he had a love for all of humanity, and that was something that drew people to him.
Well, we're in our final moments with the great journalist and author David Marinus. David, you chose to write the book Rome 1960, The Olympics That Changed the World. Why did you want to write about those games in particular?
You know, it's funny. I actually came across that when I was researching Clemente, because his great first great season was 1960, when he led the Pirates to the pennant and then the World Series against the Yankees. And as I was looking at old clippings from September of 1960, I kept seeing these amazing names: Cassius Clay, Wilma Rudolph, Rafer Johnson, Abebe Bikila. And I thought, whoa, you know, that's quite a group of great athletes. And then I realized that I could use those games to write not only about the drama of those incredible figures, but also about the world at that moment when everything was changing. It was the first televised Olympics, the first drug scandal, the first African-American to carry the American flag. East and West Germany competed as one team, even though they hated each other. It was in the midst of the Cold War. Everything was going on then, and I used those Olympics to write about not just the great athletes and characters of those Olympics, but also about the world at that moment.
Well, I feel kind of honored in a not right field, but maybe left field manner. And I graduated high school in 1960, but I didn't have any contribution to all the greatness that you were referring to.
Well, you might have watched those Olympics. That was the first on TV, Bob. You might have watched those.
I'm sure I did. And to make it even funny, I watched them on a color TV. And
no, you didn't.
Yes,
no, you didn't.
Yes. Wait a minute. Let me finish, gentlemen. I'm in the hospital. My dad came home with this colored piece of plastic, and he taped it in front of our black and white TV. And he said, "Bobby, you're the first one to watch a color TV." I said, "Thank you, Dad."
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Hey, David Marinus, final question. As Mr. Bufka has hung in there beautifully on this podcast. Hey, you talked about these three incredible human beings and Coach Lombardi and Clemente and Thorpe. Is there a sports figure or an event that you might want to write about next? And if so, why? Have you started thinking about that?
You know, Kelly, I've started thinking about it. I haven't decided yet. I almost wrote a biography of Billie Jean King, but she wanted to control the book. I don't hold that against her, but it's not the way I do things, so I didn't do that. But I'm looking for a great woman athlete to write about.
Well, you may have, from a selfishly, from a golf standpoint, you know, we've got, you know, the Babe Diedrich and Zaharias in terms of her contributions as a golfer, but also as a, as in the sports world in general. She was somewhat akin, wasn't she, David, to what Jim Thorpe accomplished?
I think so. Yeah. She was a great all around athlete. Absolutely. Anyway, I haven't decided what I'm doing next, but, it might not even have to do with sports, but if I do sports, it'll have to have that combination of a great action and a larger message.
One name I could mention that might qualify, but I know your standards are extremely high, but every dealing that I had with the great Nancy Lopez was a very, very special female athlete.
Well, that's a great idea. Thank you for mentioning Nancy Lopez. Absolutely.
My lawyer will be contacting you shortly.
I do know Bob is. Bob, you are better than I thought. Now with a line like that, that is terrific. David Maris, thank you so much for joining us. Please tell our listeners the best place, or among others, to purchase Path Lit by Lightning, The Life of Jim Thorpe.
Well, it's luckily it's sold really well, so it's at any bookstore. I love independent bookstores in your hometowns. It's at Barnes & Noble, and of course you can get it on Amazon as well.
David Marinus, again, thank you for joining us.
It's just been a thrill and an honor to speak to you, David. Your work is just incredible.
Well, I greatly appreciate that, and I wish you the best with your recovery.
Thank you, David.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover, the smarter tour ball.
Well, Bob, like we kind of teased it going in, David Marinus is a special and prolific writer. I hope people enjoyed what he had to say, and we just barely touched the surface with what things that he's written. Well, you don't win a Pulitzer Prize unless you are an extraordinarily gifted writer.
Well, that certainly goes without saying, and David has earned every accolade that has come his way, and he didn't earn it by anything other than hard, dedicated work. A wonderful role model for anybody that ever endeavors to take to put pen to paper.
Well said. And as we mentioned, Rick Riley, for years with Sports Illustrated, and you see him now on ESPN, will be our guest. Next week, it'll be our final live show of Musings on Sports in 2022. Thank you again for listening. We thank David Marinus. Look forward to having Rick Riley next week for the hospital-ridden Bob Bupka, who's my stud of the week for doing the show. This is Kelly Elvin. Thanks for listening to Musings on Sports.